now it is time for the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Happy Future Tuesday, everyone. Yes, it's a full studio today. Boy, a regular party going on here.
Oh, boy. And we better hop to it because not only is it a party, but it's a big day on headlines, guests, stuff going on, things to find out about the future.
On this cloudy Tuesday.
But warm.
It's in the mid-60s. Nice. So where shall we begin with all this? So first of all, we have in the studios, we have, let's see, in the background, we have MZ trying our latest Oculus Go headset, so gaping.
Oh, yes. We're going to get, when he returns from
he keeps
his
aiming the controller
VR
at his mouth, which
universe,
is, you
know. We'll get a comment out of him
right
now. Uh-oh. He's being asphyxiated in VR.
What app's he in?
Okay.
Microphone number one, we have Richard Cray.
Hello. Great to be here.
Richard Cray. And microphone number two, Greg Panos.
Good evening.
Yes, and these guys, as you probably heard over the years, have been our regular correspondents for covering a number of events.
All things VR,
VR and AR, mixed reality, and beyond, because we were all this Sunday at the Maker Faire. And that is serious play. Right.
Serious play.
Right. For all of us.
And turning everything techie into a toy.
Yeah, and the DIY movement is stronger than ever in this country and seems to be continuing to expand around the planet as we have more and more tools that allow us to do more and more things all the time.
That's right. For people who are out there wondering about the fate of the future and feeling dismal about it, get yourself to a Maker Faire. Mm-hmm. You will see what's really actually going on. Genius is flowering. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it makes one optimistic about life, humanity.
Yeah. Our species, you know, what we can and do and what we are doing. So we're going to give you an in-detailed report. It's kind of like going to a World's Fair in a way with all this stuff that's going on, only a World's Fair that's sourced by thousands of people.
Right. With great senses of humor, with artistic capabilities, with amazing innovative technologies that they build things that you can barely imagine. And then my favorite part about this year's Maker Faire was the orientation towards education. Mm-hmm. The theme was Inspire the Future, and every booth, it seemed like, had taken this astro-level technology, this NASA science, and turned it into some kind of kit so that you could learn fundamental principles of science and physics and engineering. And it was just so fun.
The ExoLab had an experiment that students could do growing a plant in zero-G in concert with the astronauts in the International Space Station.
You know, it's funny because I had a high school project where I was growing a plant for zero G, but because I didn't have access to a space station then, my idea was to take a seed, put it in gel so that it was surrounded by gel in a cube, in a plexiglass cube, and then rotate the cube over and over and over again.
Well, that's what they were doing. They had it in a glass tube, and it was growing, and it was rotating around.
You were ahead of your time, Dr. Future.
I was hoping to see some kind of spiral root structure that would come out of that.
And what happened?
It died.
Oh, yeah. Plants don't like to be subjected to conditions that aren't Earth-like.
I needed better soil, see-through soil that was useful. They didn't like Jello. Anyway, that's water under the bridge.
There were a lot of early adopters at Maker Faire. So every year, the technology marches along. The little computers that people are used to putting together get faster and cheaper and smaller.
What do you mean by early adopters? Seven-year-olds?
Yeah. Well, not just the kids adopting.
There were a lot of seven-year-olds.
Well, it means you adopt technology just as it comes out.
Yeah.
So you're an early adopter instead of waiting for it to catch on.
Yeah,
and the kids are... That's normal for them. They can't wait for the next thing to come out.
Well, that's what is, right?
I've never seen before
that's
that I saw at Maker Faire were kids demoing virtual reality to other kids.
Oh, wow.
And they were demoing a project that they had authored It was like Chicken VR.
Meaningful educational thing, not a shooting game.
You could go and see what it's like to be a chicken in a coop.
And not only could you put on the VR goggles and experience it that way, but the people standing in line would get to put on some chicken wings so that they would be a real live chicken avatar as they entered the VR space.
And you'd win points if you laid an egg.
Yeah, I missed that.
You could have the experience of being a chicken nugget on a conveyor belt on your way into the fryer.
Oh, please.
I met so
there is an application in VR for that. The Kentucky Fried Chicken designed and developed.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's fun.
Become a McNugget.
I met so many impressive kids. One of the biggest exhibits they had, and the one that was I thought was so much fun, was the Aerogami Dragon. They had in the center of the big building.
Was it a balloon dragon?
Yes, it was.
That was the most delightful exhibit of the fair. It gets the first prize from my point of view.
It's a 30-foot dragon. It looked like it was made out of balloons.
It was made out of balloons. Complete. And then they let anybody, if you wanted to participate, build the backdrop. So they had a backdrop made out of balloons that was about 30 feet high and 25 feet wide. And it was a blue sky with white clouds and a castle.
All made out of balloons. Wow.
And the little kids were standing at little tables and blowing up the balloons and sizing them.
This is not just any kind of balloon exhibit. This was very carefully constructed sculpture that was made of balloons that had been mapped out. So you needed different balloons of different sizes to be put together into this sculpture. And the sculpture went all the way up to the ceiling of the exhibits.
It took 3 days. At one point, you would see one wing hanging over there, and then the other wing, and the body was sitting here, and somebody was working on the head. And then the third day, they put it together, and some rambunctious little kids would, once they had it all together, would be pulling on the wires, and it became animated, like a balloon in the Macy's Day Parade.
Right.
And then they turned on the giant Tesla coil, and they all exploded at once.
Yeah.
Do not take everything that Greg says as fact.
This is droll humor, mostly fiction. They had an inflatable Tesla coil out in the outside area that was supposed to display, but it blew over.
That's what you get for bringing an inflatable Tesla coil.
That's right.
And it didn't work?
And it didn't. No, it blew over. It was 40 feet high.
Huh. Yeah, it would have been really spectacular.
Yeah, inflatable things outside. We've had personal experience trying to have inflatable exhibits outside, and you are just a victim of the elements. If you get lucky, you might be able to share it, but normally the wind takes over.
There were all kinds of fun things. There were some kids that did this thing called the Big Face Box, and basically it was, what can you do with a cardboard box?
That was cool, too. I loved that.
So what was the most great thing you could do with a cardboard box that
you saw? Well, they had a Fresnel lens.
A Fresnel lens in front of it?
Is that what it is? On one side of it. And then just a small LED light to illuminate your face. And you would put it over your head, and it would make your head
Five times the size of your head.
And what was really fun is they had about a dozen of them. So you'd see cardboard boxes just sitting around with
a little note saying, put this on, share this,
so you just have six or seven people get up to take a group shot with these gigantic heads. It was really funny. I think you got
Mrs. Future to try that.
Yeah, I tried it. I have some great photo ops. Although I didn't find five or six other people with big heads. I was the only big head
You had a big head before you put it on.
That's right, exactly. Exactly, but it still fit.
It's Mrs. Future you're talking to.
I did see outside this giant mech that I think we were talked about on the show last week, the prosthesis. They're supposed to be one of the main crowd pleasers for the show.
Looked like the loader from Alien.
Right. And humans in the Ripley, center of it.
Yeah, Ripley
Controls it. It's supposed to be the front end of a new sport called mech racing.
Oh, yeah. It probably weighs 10 tons by itself.
You guys can hear the music, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go to a break.
Time to wrap up.
To be continued after the break. Let's put that in the
Dr. Future Show
narrative.
On KSEO. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
FM AM.
Today.
FM.
Welcome to The Zone, KSEO's free speech zone.
To think about, to
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We are talking about the Maker Faire, all the incredible things that we saw this week. We've got Richard Cray and Greg Panos in the studio who are with us. We're talking about the giant mechs just before the break, the prosthesis, I believe it was called. And I didn't actually see any mech races. I just heard
that they were. There just in time for one of the mech performances, which were scheduled, and it was broken.
Aww.
So this giant multi-legged insect that was like a big transformer.
Or crab. Giant crab.
Like, yeah.
25 feet across and
it was
20 feet high.
It was all scrunched up like a dead bug.
Oh.
And the sign said that the performance was canceled and they were trying to repair it.
It had been
stepped on by the big Paul Bunyan exhibit.
Hey, Al, did you see the solar panels racing around? The solar panels?
Oh, yeah. There was a car racing setup out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
That was of electric
remote control
vehicles.
Solar panels flying around on wheels.
They looked
on a
like
racetrack.
Blue hors d'oeuvre trays with reels.
That's right. Yeah.
But they were fast.
They were really fast.
They could serve things, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could. Right. Drinks, anyone?
Yeah. They might block some of the powers.
Oh, went under the table.
I didn't see an actual race. I saw people testing them around the racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
But to have actual races would be another story.
Mm-hmm. They had some great talks. Tony DeRose from Pixar gave a great talk on makers, and his kids were makers, and they've all gotten these great jobs because they were makers. And
They made a flight simulator in the garage.
A flight simulator?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Full-on flight simulator.
I mean, like you could sit in?
You could sit in. It had monitors and everything. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, it was a gaming system, really sort of tricked out. A seat that rocked back and forth and did all this stuff.
And they were letting people try it out?
No, it was just one of the examples of how his kids were makers.
How they got into makers,
that was their
right?
big maker project, and they earned a lot, and they ended up getting jobs and stuff from it.
A lot of the maker stuff I'd seen were like kids making carousels for the backyard. And it's just no end to what you can make.
They had an augmented reality room, a whole area dedicated to that.
That was the VR, AR, mixed reality?
Oh, mixed reality, right. They called it mixed reality.
Now, why are they calling it mixed for the uninitiated?
Well, you know, there's augmented reality and virtual reality, and that sort of the fusion of the two is considered mixed reality. So
whatever else.
Yeah, it's a field that's struggling to cement its terminology into the minds and hearts of the populace. So there's XR, which is extended reality, and I think virtual reality is caught on.
VR.
People kind of know what that
after
means.
25 years, I guess.
And augmented reality will become something
new norm,
that people know what it is.
Well, the phones do those, augmented reality.
Yeah, they do. You can hold them up, and they know where they are in space, and they can overlay things. And
I saw one exhibit with AR where it's an art gallery where you hold up the phone, and you look at the art with it, and the art has a augmented component to it where it suddenly pops out in 3D or is in color, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so the augmented reality application recognizes the painting, and that triggers an animation that is overlaid right on the painting. So Mona Lisa comes to life. She turns her head and she starts talking to you. And that's what you see on your little phone or your tablet as you're holding it up with the camera of that tablet or phone looking at the Mona Lisa.
Right.
She transforms.
She frowns. Books come to life.
Yeah.
Literally.
She starts frowning in earnest.
No, one of the things right next to the mixed reality area was tiny homes. Mrs. Future spent a bit of time there talking to the tiny homes.
Yes, of course.
Folks.
Santa Cruz is a tiny homes mecca with the university and all these creative people trying to figure out how to beat the high cost of rent.
So with the uninitiated, what's in a tiny home?
Well, a tiny home is a solution to the housing problem where a tiny home designer puts their building on top of some wheels, say on a trailer, and create something on that little footprint that has all the things you need in a home. It has a place to sleep, it has a kitchen, it has lights and plumbing and just a place to call your own.
So it's a real home.
It's really a real home, but it's very compact and very intricately designed. And these tiny home builders take a lot of pride in how they have created everything themselves, you know, learned all of the principles of putting together a home by doing it themselves. There's going to be a tiny home show in San Jose next month in Santa Clara. We'll get some more details on that. And I understand that there's a facility that one of the other shows on KSEO is really excited about. There's a tiny home facility for vets that's being discussed and developed. So
we also met somebody from UC Santa Cruz there involved with tiny home building.
Right. Yeah.
And a whole book on the topic too.
Sure. Yeah.
All you need is virtual reality in your tiny home and you've got a gigantic estate.
There you go. Yeah. Tiny home to sit with your real world body. That's and right. Then put on your VR goggles and you've got a huge universe to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw an exhibit.
Sounds like the Matrix.
Called Where My Story, and they had various objects like an umbrella or gloves, and you would pick up the object and it would tell a story about the person that actually owned that. I thought that was interesting, considered what your relative would die and leave all their stuff, and imagine if when you're looking through all their stuff, you pick it up and it tells a story.
Wow, that's cool.
I was last used going to see a movie.
Right.
So there was a little sensor in each object, and when you brought it into the exhibit area,
it would tell its
story. Read the sensor and bring up the story.
That's interesting. To tell the story from the points of view of objects, that were in the environment at the time of the story.
Right.
I'm a toothbrush, and I used to belong to Alan, who never brushed his teeth. I sat all by myself in the draw for centuries.
It's because I went electric, you fool.
That's right.
There's a lot of...
We won't talk about the electric version.
No, we won't.
There's a lot of digital printing, 3D printing, 3D printed jewelry, combining geometric shapes.
Can you really get LED. Interesting jewelry from printers?
Really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, right. All the fractal, all the geometry and all of that. It's
That's
beautiful.
True. It lends itself well to geometry.
Yeah, but intricate, too. It's small.
Mostly, it's still plastic, though. Isn't it?
Right.
Most of the 3D printers... Just plastic?
Well, no. They have all kinds of new materials. They've got all kinds of metals.
But have they filtered down to the DIY community?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You've got optical plastic. You can make lenses. And you've got all kinds of metallics that you can use that can be solidified into little objects
metal,
that are really very strong.
I didn't realize you could do optics.
Yeah, well, the optical medium that they have that go into the printers is fairly new. It's,
I would imagine.
It's just starting to have variations of it that are used for different kinds of things.
Huh. Print up a pair of glasses if you...
Well, let's say you had a good prescription that you got from your optometrist and you didn't want to go spend a lot of money on glasses. You just wanted to make your own and not care about them very much. And if you sat on them, you make another pair.
Now, this other thing we have, it looks like a vacuform. Look like you vacuform your body or your face.
Well, you know, vacuform is something that people don't even know what it is today.
That's true. It was very popular in the 50s and 60s.
Right. So. It was a way of taking a sheet of plastic and stretching it over an object and then having that sheet of plastic retain its form. So nowadays it's used industrial to blister pack products that you see on the shelves at stores, and you tear open the plastic and throw it away, but it sort of melted over the plastic.
Yeah, I remember I had a little toy called Vacuform. You'd heat up a piece of plastic over like a hot plate, and then when it was almost ready to drip, you'd slide it, you put it over the top of some object.
Pull the handle down and apply pressure. Yeah.
And then suck the air out of it, and it would create a shape. And it would.
And a health hazard.
Well,
I had one of those.
Well, perhaps the kind of plastic they were using. Yeah. So there's lots of new materials too for vacuforming. I was talking to the guy that was doing that.
Really, not just plastic anymore?
Oh yeah, no. This is polyethylene, polyacetate, polywanna cracker.
So it's another way of manufacturing stuff out of.
Yeah, it's a born maker tool.
Yeah. Now, there was any evidence of AI there at the show?
Intelligent life?
Yeah. And well, you hear about AI coming from the big guys like Amazon's Alexa and Siri from Apple and Cortona from Microsoft. But there seems to be an open source movement that's evolving with AI, which means that you can design your own.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if you saw much of that at the Maker Faire.
Well, there are a couple of speakers at a few of the stages.
So it's still early in that process of beginning to initiate that kind of artificial intelligence in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're seeing is the use of AI, also defined as machine learning, which is being used to take long lists of things that you need to do in a process and to repeat those things rapidly and with all the correct parameters. So you train it and teach it how to do it, and then it gets better and better. And then all those things you used to have to do manually, you submit it to the machine learning program, and it processes all those things for you, and then outputs
the
result.
Yeah, the Google booth, right? We're talking about, I guess we're going to go to a break.
Yeah, Google had some AI with vision.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay.
Google it was called AIY, like do your own AI.
Mm-hmm.
And they were definitely putting together some facial recognition. They had a kit that you could do for yourself where you could train a box to do facial recognition and say how many people were smiling.
Well, my Sony camcorder is a smile detector. Mm-hmm. Kind of along those lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So more after the break, folks. Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We have in the studio Richard Cray, Greg Panos, Mrs. Future, and I think MZ sitting in the back watching.
Yeah, he's not
Netflix
really in the
Oculus
studio.
Go.
He's gone somewhere on
he's
the Oculus Go.
Yeah.
Lost in space.
Yeah. I didn't see any Oculus Go's, as a matter of fact, at the fair.
Yeah, I think we're a little ahead of the curve there still.
Yeah. But we did see a lot of video and a lot of VR.
Yes, and the great. Silicon Valley Virtual Reality Group was there in force in the dark area. They had a couple of VR systems.
Now, what's the dark area? What do you mean?
The dark room.
Dark room.
So, no lights
that.
In there, just illuminations from art pieces and projections and virtual reality and all kinds of really cool exhibits that took advantage of the dark area.
There was one sculpture that looked like a plant that would be on Pandora from Avatar. That
was beautiful, yeah.
Really large.
Glow-in-the-dark plant?
Mm-hmm.
With, fiber optics and all. Mm. It's a beautiful piece of art.
Did it look like it was alive?
Yeah.
And did it get happy when you hung out around it?
I don't know.
Can it allow you to plug into it?
There was a big sculpture piece in the center called, I think it's called Pipe Dreams. It was made out of
PVC.
PVC, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was about 30 feet tall, and you could walk through it, and it had water features in it. And it had no purpose. I think that's interesting. A lot of the things that are made, that people make, they have no purpose, but
they're just
make
fun.
You smile.
Oh my.
Something
yeah,
that just
look at that. A PVC sculpture. So, right. It reminds me of, say, Moss Landing or some old electricity power plant. Also looks like it has no purpose, but actually all of those pipes do go somewhere. something.
Yeah, it was generating mist in a couple of different points, and then it was a fountain in another area that led into a pool.
Mm. It looks like something on a plumber's camp at Burning Man.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
In the dark room, they had a illuminated ping pong table that almost looked like a disco floor from...
That seems like it would make it more difficult to play ping pong.
Yeah, right.
Why, they see a glowing ball in the dark? I guess you would have to have glowing paddles.
The table looked like a disco floor from the 70s,
Oh, okay, yeah. We've got visuals. It definitely looks like one of those floors that change color.
Don't tell the radio audience that we're looking at things.
Describe it.
That's right.
Give them an audio picture.
There's a club, and all they do is make R2-D2s and BB-8s.
I saw that. Yeah, that was really cool.
That's right. There was an R2-D2 corner where at least 7 or 8 of them were hanging out.
Right.
The BB-8 robots are the new round ones that roll
around.
There
was a spherical eyeball.
That's right. Yeah, there was a projection eyeball, which is very eye-catching. And then two other eyes on a little character that would track you as you walk back and forth.
These are what would be like androids almost.
Yeah, they're almost like little human eyes that were projection eyes.
Projection. That was a little video projector or a little Elisa?
I think so, yeah. I think that's how that's accomplished. And they put them in various masks and the like. It was very, very engaging.
Realistic looking eyes in masks.
Right.
Yeah. Where they look like they're looking at you.
Well, you know, we're humans, so we've got millions of years of neurological circuitry designed to recognize faces and look at eyes. And so when we look at these digital representations of cool things people make that activate those neurons,
then it gets our attention.
We get all excited. We pay attention. Right. So,
now, what are these robots here with lays around their necks, these androids?
So those were some AI-driven machine 3D printed robots that were having jokes and conversations between each other.
Really?
Now, you were cracking up. I could not understand what they were saying.
Yeah.
when we first came upon
They were like doing shtick between each other.
From they have the, different shticks, I see. A poetry jam.
In the vein of all the, you know, great old Jewish comedians.
Knock-knock jokes.
Burns and Allen and knock-knock jokes.
Did you have a sense that they could listen to each other?
I don't know.
There was nothing coordinated.
Well, they would ask, who's on first?
Well, they were talking to each other, and that was pretty funny.
Well, they had buttons that you could press.
Well, they were all talking. I don't know that they were talking to each other.
I guess these established their jokes, or they would do.
There were big buttons in front of them that had little signs on them that said, who's on first? And
hi.
What's on
second? Hi, just checking. So you would hit the button, and it would stop them, and they would respond to it somehow. It's actually kind of fun.
Liam Kennedy was there. He won one of the editor's awards. He was 3D printing these miniature plastic
space stations.
Yeah.
And he was joking that a woman had come back around wearing them as earrings.
Sure.
But they were about the size of a brooch, and it was really cool. I loved like that little tchotchke. That
ISS earrings?
So
yeah. Well, what he makes is a little microcontroller-based space station tracking system that it always knows where the space station is, and it shows you little graphs and charts if you hook it up to a little monitor and video, and all these other little telemetry feeds that are coming from the space station have been quantified into this one little box that he designed that you can buy. Mm. And if you're a space nut, you would set a monitor up in the corner and hook this box up to it and just leave it running all the time like a clock in the room and always be aware of what's going on without having to dedicate a whole computer to it.
Right. It's a dedicated...
They're not expensive.
A dedicated device for your space station tracking.
Yeah.
I noticed something called the MEPED. MEPED version 2.0. That looks like some kind of...
Spider robot.
I seem to be a lot of spider robots.
Yeah, lots of little maker robots. Yeah.
And some pretty cool giraffes. Mm-hmm. My favorite vehicle there was actually a horse-drawn carriage that the horse's legs were these rudders. There was a wood circular foot at the bottom of their leg, and these 4 feet were just being bicycle pedaled at different rates, and then the feet would pull the vehicle forward. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, there were several art cars. There was one called Rabid Transit, which I guess is very popular in the
Burning Man
world. And
Rabid?
Rabid Transit.
And can be.
It was a combination of some sort of fish animation and a giant
dragon
monster's
fire
head
breathing
with its eyeballs rolling around with huge, huge plumes of fire spewing out.
Right, and the operator was playing the fire organ, so he was doing a whole fire DJ organ jam with this metallic art car.
What a crowd pleaser.
I was taking so many photos, and it sort of died down, and I thought, okay, it stopped going through its cycle, and I got really close to it, and it just out of the blue, it went...
It saw you coming.
It practically knocked me on the ground, and I had my eyebrows singed.
Oops. Well, I guess you've been warned.
So there were a few Burning Man-like exhibits zipping around the lots on various motorized platforms. Kind of thing that you see out in the playa.
The transportation, new forms of personal transportation.
Right, personal cupcakes that you can
ride cupcakes,
around.
Right.
Oh, there's always cupcakes.
Yes. Cupcakes.
You know, one of my favorite exhibits was actually the Bose speaker booth.
I spent a lot of time at Bose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was researching underwater speakers and hydrophones and stuff.
That's right, because we're getting ready to have a very special show. Probably, is it next week?
It might be as soon as next week. It all depends on the weather and the arrival of certain gear and certain people.
All right, but anyway, we're going to go and try and commune with the whales out here in the bay with our friends.
That's cool.
Do a whale-watching expedition and see if we can hear them.
See if we can play them some music. See if we can get them to play us some music.
So I was talking to the Bose people about noise cancellation. Because one of the things we'd like to be able to hear when we're out in the bay here is to be able to hear the cetaceans, the whales and the dolphins. But the noise of the motor tends to overshadow everything when I put the hydrophone in the water for the first test. So is there a way of canceling out the sound of the motor in the audio track? Right. That's what I was investigating. So I was talking to the Bose people about how they do noise cancellation, because they create these headphones that you wear on airplanes to cancel out the noise of the engine.
That's called diminished reality.
Yeah, well, diminished external reality.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. It's amazing, because when we did our test of the hydrophones, you could hear boats that were 5 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear their motor engine. And so trying to get a good recording of the whales when you can hear every boat in Half Moon Bay is a little challenging. So we're going to do our best.
It really bothers the crustaceans.
What I liked about the Bose booth was they had a couple of kits that were really fun. One of them was a speaker kit where you could make your own speaker, and it started with a couple of magnets that were about as round as a quarter and about 2 inches tall. And then they created a little coil that went around the magnet, and you turned the power on and off to show you how the magnets are used to create a physical sensation. And then after you learn that, the next thing they show you is how the oscilloscopes measure this magnetic force, and then they basically keep refining it until you understand that that's what's going on when you're listening to sounds from a speaker.
Right.
Wow.
And I just thought, what a great way for kids to turn this mystery box called a speaker into real information that they can use.
Bose also demonstrated what the world sounded like to people that have hearing deficits.
Right. Yes, they had a bunch of special effects that they could push a button. And in the headphones, when you spoke, the microphone would be translated into these different kind of hearing problems that people have. So
it gives you more of a sense of literally stepping into their, well, not shoes, but head.
Yeah, stepping into their ears.
Stepping into their ears, right. So you have more of a sense of what they're going through and how they're interpreting things.
Yeah, and intentionally to create empathy so that when grandkids are hearing their grandparents say, what? They'll understand what their grandparents are actually hearing and have a little more sympathy for them.
That happens in VR as well. I mean, trying on a virtual costume or a different avatar that can do that in a sense.
Put you into someone else's moccasins.
Someone else's shoes, exactly.
Right.
Richard, you mentioned something about how Nintendo had a whole zone at the fair. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Nintendo had an entire building. They had three different experiences. They had this sort of retro cardboard kit that worked in concert with their Nintendo tablet device.
It's called the Nintendo Switch.
Nintendo Switch.
Right.
So they had one experience was putting together this little cardboard keyboard that had 8 keys, and you can turn it into a synthesizer or make all kinds of fun musical noises. So that was a kit. Another kit was a cardboard fishing rod that had a string that went into a little pull device that had the digital device on it, so you could look into a virtual ocean and see the fish swimming around and see your cord come down into the virtual device, and then you would feel and see the fish bite the string and it would pull on it. The other one, you created a cardboard backpack that had strings that attach around your wrists and your ankles and allowed a kid to feel as if they were a giant robot. It had weights in the back of it, and so it would give a sort of a tactile, a haptic
feedback,
which was quite wonderful.
So it
was
very clever, but kind of low-tech, like you could DIY it.
Yeah, it was like a Kluge adaptation of this little gaming console, which is very popular, where you take very simple little external constructs of pieces of things and hook them up to the controller and the other things on this Nintendo to make it do things you would never play with or do otherwise.
How popular was this exhibit?
Really
popular. The line
popular.
Was a mile long and to get into this thing.
They had a lot of different exhibit areas. They were only the three different devices, but the kids were just eating that up. I mean, just
we were lucky we were representing the Dr. Future show because they whisked us in like celebrities.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. So we got to see that.
Fell over each other to let us in.
Fantastic.
There were a lot of people, too, that made musical instruments. It was a couple of kids from UC Davis that had made this theremin instrument that had this sort of infinity, spherical infinity mirror effect in it. I don't know. Explain what a theremin is, Gregory.
It's a proximity noise generator.
It's something that people recognize from the 50s horror movies. Because
no, not
it makes
science fiction.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, it's like a woo-woo sound.
Please.
Right. It's always associated with... It was science fiction movies. Alien spaceship is arriving.
Bernard Herrmann wrote the music for The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes.
So it was invented by a...
And it would often happen just as something weird was about to happen.
Russian inventor Leon Theremin invented it.
Presage.
And the first one used radio tubes and antennas. And
now it's digital. And it looks like a disco ball.
Well, yeah, they've been recreated many different ways.
And maybe getting more than one note, you know?
You can do a polyphonic theremin, too. Yeah. I mean, they have the little plugins for all the music software now for theremins. I like using it.
Yeah, I would think we'd have some kind of really amazing theremin today.
Well, there was a woman who took it up to do classical performance. Her name was Clara Rockmore. So back, she ended up marrying Leon Theremin, and she gave concerts, big, beautiful highbrow concerts. Yeah. No, in the United States.
Really?
No, they emigrated to the United States. They became citizens here.
But there's not a modern-day version of that yet, is there?
Of the theremin?
Of a musician that has taken it up as their...
There's a guy that plays a laser harp. There's various constructs of laser harps that use lasers where you can interrupt the beams and make music. Those are kind of theremin-like.
There was one at the fair that had laser... Is that what you call it? A laser harp?
Yeah.
Someone made a hexachord.
Hexachord. Now, what is that?
Another musical instrument.
It's just a musical instrument that's shaped like a hexagon.
Right.
I see. Instead of a guitar, a hex.
Just a giant hex on you.
A hex box. Hilarious.
A hex box. I like
with
that.
With strings on it.
Strings on it. It was picking itself. It was playing itself.
Picking itself.
Yeah. Self picking.
I see.
Do we talk about the trains?
You didn't mention the trains. Trains have always been a perennial favorite.
Right.
Beautifully detailed miniature train sets. Big ones, too.
Was there something, a European
the
origin?
The European Train Enthusiasts Society were there this year, and I've never seen it before, and they had the largest train I've ever seen. It's a model train with little villages and little cows grazing in the pastures on the hills.
It was the most extraordinary model train collection I've ever seen. It was so many vignettes that looked like scenes from a movie. They had probably centimeter tall people, and they had crowds of people, say, getting on balloons or having a deck party dinner or involved in some kind of...
It was magical, and smoke coming out of the smokestacks and out of the train. It's just
a world in miniature.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Talk about virtual reality. You know? Original virtual reality.
I was talking to them because just last week I got running a virtual reality model train program that you could build called Rolling Line, and it's just amazing. You could do almost the same amount of detail as they were building in VR.
Well, that's a lot of fun.
Amazing.
Hey, listen, guys, we've got a caller. Happy Valley Joe wants to chime in. Maybe he was at the fair.
Hey, Happy Valley Joe, you there?
Hi.
Hey, I just want to say Jimmy Page brought out that instrument in concert with his bow, and he used it on Dazed and Confused.
Oh,
and
cool.
He used that in the 70s, from like 73 to like almost 77, man.
The theremin.
He went for like a 20-minute solo and used that thing. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Good to know.
So the theremin has made it mainstream. Jimmy Page, huh?
Right. Led Zeppelin.
Wow.
Right?
All right.
Yeah.
And Robert Plant.
So trains, and there was a building full of food. Did we talk about the food?
So theremin was used in the Beach Boys song, Good Vibrations.
That's right. When I was just
That's when the Americans learned about it.
That's right.
Yeah. No. What was unique about that was that the interface, I mean, it wasn't keys, it wasn't strings.
No, just moving your hands in the air.
Yeah, moving your hands in the air, like a gesture language.
Mm-hmm.
The original VR mixed reality device.
That's right. Mixed reality music.
Yeah. I'm saying we're due for an update on that kind of instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And you just think it's an instrument where you don't actually have an instrument.
Well, you know, it's interesting. These kids that don't know any better can pick up these virtual instruments that are only half-baked and really make music out of them right off the
right.
box.
Yeah, no yeah. preconceptions. They yeah. just jump in and see what works.
Yeah, they haven't told themselves that they can't do it yet.
Food. I wanted to get something in on the food because it was so crowded. It gave me claustrophobia just trying to get into that building. And I wonder if any of you guys managed to infiltrate
the future food building.
The future food building, yes. Like, do you see any printed meat? Or anything.
Oh, yeah. We had a couple of different versions of mushroom jerky, which was yeah.
mushroom
good.
Jerky.
Yeah, it was delicious. Yeah.
I'd never had that. It was really
yeah. kind of like. Good. Does it taste like chicken or beef?
Looks like pork. Tastes like chicken.
Yeah, that was really for your sense of taste. So I remember having some really wonderful orange, ginger, jam,
marmalade,
and honey. And chocolate that you drink. And
so we went on the press day, which was Friday, and we actually got a chance to go through all that and try those things. But yeah. we heard on Saturday that you couldn't get near that building that was wall-to-wall people.
Like, yeah, it was
a huge
Sunday,
crush
it was insane,
on the right. inside.
Of course, food is always going to be a perennial favorite for our species.
Yeah, they had live bees in there.
Live bees, yeah. yeah. Some of the beekeepers were talking about the use of pesticides and how in Europe they've outlawed them and the bees are starting to return their numbers. They're not dying off. And then here, of course, they've been decimating regulations on the pesticides because the companies like Monsanto, you know, they give a lot of money to elections, so they want these things to be removed so they can continue using yeah. their chemicals. But they're killing bees, and the science is all there. And in Europe, they've taken these chemicals off the market and went for more organic ways of dealing with pesticides, and the bees are surviving and thriving and coming back. But that's not the case here. Hmm. We're kind of behind the eight ball here. We got to get with it.
Okay. I did notice. Oh, okay. Well, we'll save this for after the break here.
Yeah. You want to give us a little preview?
Well, one of the things I thought was fascinating was there's a whole history of portraying the third dimension, you know, 3D. Photography.
Uh-huh,
goes
yes.
back to the turn of the last century.
Sounds fun.
Amazing, amazing exhibit.
I'll have we'll something right to say about that. World of
Tomorrow. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're just talking about all the amazing things at the Maker Faire this year. And I had noticed a large exhibition on the third dimension, on all the ways in which the third dimension we've attempted to replicate it in our media, starting with some of the 19th century flip cards, mm-hmm. you know, where they had two pictures next to each other and you would put it in a kind of primitive ViewMaster.
Stereo opticon.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, stereo opticon. They used to call them the viewing device.
And they work pretty well.
Yeah, you just need a right and a left eye view.
Yeah.
It means you have to take two pictures and the two cameras have to be eye distance apart. And you can get those two pictures and print them on a board.
And it's been trying since the earliest days right. to create the third dimension. And even they had an exhibit of modern video cameras, getting two cameras and yoking them together yeah. to try to create it.
You can make a stereoscopic photography apparatus quite easily with just two cameras on a
matching
little,
lenses
yeah, on a little track that are separated and sort of towed in and aimed at the subject. I've been doing 3D photography for years when I bought a really nice little point and shoot camera that Fuji used to sell. So convenient to just take it out like a regular snapshot camera, but you get the three dimensions. And now we have virtual reality programs. We can actually look at all those pictures like life size in front of you and get all the depth out of it.
Yeah. I've noticed with this Oculus Go that they have very nice 3D mm-hmm. yeah. videos in there.
And right. So there's 3D viewers. You can take your whole 3D photography collection and look at it in the Oculus now. You don't need to stereopticon it or print it or anything. It's very easy.
So that's what we're waiting for, is some common denominator device that's mm-hmm. Not that expensive that we can get the third dimension in.
There have been a few smartphones that had stereo cameras on them, but the public just didn't.
This just hasn't caught on.
Didn't understand
right?
how to look at them or how to use them. And I think we're headed in a direction where people have a little bit more facility with newer technologies that buy them some extra level of perceptive dimension,
yeah.
like 3D, which has been around for a long time.
The future yeah. trend in photography will be volumetric photography and volumetric video.
Yes.
And Gregory was walking around everywhere at the Maker Faire, blowing people's minds with his
performing magic tricks.
A 3D scanner built into his phone.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I have one of the only phones you can buy on the market now, the Asus Zenfone AR that has a 3D scanner in it.
And you go around and just scan everything that has three dimensions to it, and it shows up as a 3D model.
I start a scan, I wave it around in 3D around an object, and then I stop it, and then I zoom in and I show the person.
He scanned the giant dragon, balloon dragon.
How'd that turn out?
Totally
it turned out great.
Blew the artist away.
It was about a 5-minute scan of waving the camera around and running around a 100-foot area.
Yeah.
But it managed to capture all the depth, all the way up to 30 feet up to the top of it, and all from side to side. Big, beautiful 3D model. That is a huge, dense point cloud that I can import right into virtual reality. I could step in, I could scale it up or scale it down, or make it life size.
So that's important because you can start creating your own environments in virtual reality.
Right.
And then build houses, build structures, and then actually entertain visitors in that.
Yeah, I could scan this room just by waving the phone around for a minute. With the scanner turned on. So every time I saw anything that looked interesting in reality, from a perceptual dimensional point of view, something that had depth and structure to it, I would pull out the phone and turn on the scanner and digitize it.
You may know.
So there are a lot.
How many did you do at the show?
I got about 10 or 15 of them that were exhibits, were really interesting
cool
exhibits that people had of objects and things.
We stopped at Casa de Fruta on the way up here, and I don't know, people that have been there, there's a rusty old truck that they put fruit on that's inside there as a display.
It's a display.
It's been in there for years. And Gregory spent like 10 minutes walking around there. And so we have that captured forever.
Yeah, and it looks beautiful.
And it's a beautiful piece of art. Yeah,
it looks like a piece of art that somebody sculpted. You can bring that in VR and make it life size and get in the truck and sit in the chair and walk around. You know, there's some areas I didn't capture, but that's the thing, is the fact that it's imperfect makes it interesting in a way.
Yeah.
It's a diminished reality to some degree.
It evokes feelings. It evokes...
Because it's all color. It captures all the color of everything in the third dimension. These 3D scanners will start appearing on quite a few phones. Apple has plans for three of their flagship phones
in about
a year and a half to have these scanners on them.
So the because right now the Apple 10 has... the 3D scanner.
Right.
It looks at your face, right?
Yeah, it has one to do face unlock and avatar emojis with your face, tracking your face. And some of the developers are starting to access the tools that they provided to make that sensor useful and interesting and fun.
So I might be able to digitize objects as well?
Well, it's a little bit different than the one that I have in my device. Mine uses a time-of-flight laser scanner, and the one in the Apple uses a structured light scanner. So a structured light blasts a spray of infrared dots, and as you move your face around, the dots change their location, and the sensor is monitoring that and building a 3D facial model from that.
So it's specifically oriented towards facial modeling.
It's better for that, and it's cheaper. The one that I have consumes more power, but it's got a lot wider range. It's much more precise for measuring environments. So for anyone that's involved in a trade or a craft or construction or people that assess buildings, this kind of scanner and the device I have is more useful a tool than the one in the iPhone.
Gotcha,
Visually, you would equate it to a pointillism painting, like a George Seurat painting. They're not particularly perfect, but it's artistic in that way. These little color dots, you're like, dot, 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 dot,
yeah,
dot. They all add up to the volume.
Gotcha. It generates a point cloud. It's called a point cloud.
And if you're an artist, you might like to work with a point cloud as something to start with to build a
So you can bring it into VR and use some of the painting programs in VR to paint over the point cloud.
Yeah,
and
make it part of a bigger
Use it as a reference. And there's some beautiful artwork that's starting to emerge with people playing around with this
with
3D capture stuff.
3D paint program. Do you know if the Oculus Go has any programs along those lines?
I don't know. I'll have to spend some time with one.
Because that's the new $199. That's the one you'll be able to play without spending a fortune on getting into this new art form. A couple other things. One, I saw a remote controlled submarine that was commercially available for like $1,500.
Right.
At the event. That was amazing because those things were like $100,000 just a few years ago.
Right, and only the oceanographic researchers had them.
That's right, over here in Moss Landing.
Counting turtles or inspecting marine life for problems and the like.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a group out of Berkeley that's been creating the aquamarine, mm-hmm. and it would look really cool. It was really, really nice.
Yeah.
I've been talking to Sylvia Earle, who's one of the great pioneers of the ocean, who lives in the East Bay. They've got it now, so you can actually probably take that to Hawaii and get some excellent scans of the seabed there and the coral reefs and mm-hmm. that stuff. It's just
right.
Stunning photography. The other thing were the drones. Now, I was hoping to see a little bit more in the drone department there. But the most interesting thing was there had been a company that had developed swarm drones,
mm-hmm.
right, where you could link the drones' behaviors together to create little clouds of drones.
Like they used in the Olympics to create those mm-hmm. point
yeah,
animations
the Intel,
in the sky.
The Intel. There was a company that had supposedly tried to make it, and they went belly up, but their software and hardware went open source, and then there's a users group in the Bay Area that's
right.
taking this swarm drone technology to the next level through open source.
Right. Good things never die. They just change hands.
In this case, it sure looked interesting to me. So that was also getting my...
Well, you know, you can use those drone yeah. swarms to scan buildings in large areas.
That's true. They could have their 3D scanners on them,
yeah.
right? The drones could have...
Yeah, you could just use the regular cameras on them to acquire photography, and then you pump all those different photographic points of views into a cloud-based analyzer that fits a point cloud onto all the images. I mean, it's very compute-intensive, but creates very accurate large-scale data of big architectural sites and buildings and
if you have enough cameras, if you have enough cameras now, they actually do a volumetric capture of a soccer game or a sports
right.
event happening. And so you can view it from every imaginable point of
you have interactive yeah. control of your point of view and position out on the playing field.
Yeah.
Well, makes it much more interesting to watch it later. You can choose the
yeah,
shot that you want to look at.
It's the advance of yeah. 3D slow-mo. It's like 3D slow-mo, where you can slow motion, go
yeah.
back and watch the guy catching the ball from 10 different points of view, or put yourself right next to him. It's the ball sort of
experience
lands.
The whole thing.
Lands in his yeah. arms, or lands in his hands, yeah.
We went and saw a special screening of Ready Player One, and a bunch of us were standing outside the theater afterwards, and Gregory... There's eight of us standing there. He says, just everybody just stand still and just pose for a moment. And he walks around and he scans all of us standing there and having this conversation. And that little moment is just sort of captured and frozen in time.
It's forever. Actually good the to do portraits of celebrities and things like that.
So you can move scans. Around it. You move around it. You change your point
can
of
you
view.
Can you get group shots that way too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. We did one at dinner. Remember?
Oh, wait. Yeah. We okay. That was with your camera. Yeah.
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 Yeah, so this I'm calling these depthies. Depthy, like selfie, but with depth, or a depthy.
Can you take a regular shot from a depthy?
Oh, yeah, you can just frame.
Pointy.
Yeah, you can frame grab it.
Point.
And I think the public is going to really go big on depthies, mm-hmm. certainly when they start showing up in the devices and it's a one or two click thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to just go bonkers.
Right. So. Yeah, and at Facebook, they did announce that that's their next
right,
big
right.
push is into that kind
yeah,
of
yeah, so Facebook camera. Figured out a way to do it with a sparse number of pictures that you might have of a favorite old playroom that you grew up in to reconstruct it using machine intelligence,
mm-hmm.
create depth for it.
Right.
Well, fascinating. Also, there was a whole area on food there, too, that was quite mm-hmm. interesting.
Mushrooms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, mushrooms. Hey, we're at the top of the hour.
Stay tuned till after the news. Dr. Future Show.
Thank you, Greg and Richard, for
KSCO.
The download.
We'll be back.
Santa yes. Cruz.
And now it is time to return to the futures.
SpaceX just launched just in the last few minutes.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Hey.
Yeah.
Seven satellites for NASA and Iridium today.
Mm-hmm.
Here's
seven
how to,
satellites for NASA.
Yeah. Well, one of them is the NASA Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment follow-on, or GRACE-FO. It's a mission that tracks very small changes in gravity from Earth orbit. It's two satellites that are twin satellites the size of small cars. They map changes in Earth's water and ice using gravity. They look at rising sea levels and melting of the polar ice caps. And they do this not by collecting light from the surface or from the atmosphere like our other satellites do, but they do this by detecting changes in Earth's gravity. They fly in unison with one trailing the other at a distance of about 137 miles. And when they pass over a part of the Earth where the strength of the gravity field either increases or decreases, it affects the distance between the two spacecraft just ever so slightly. And so to obtain the information about the distribution of the mass below the satellites, they don't need to look down. Instead, they only need to look at each other and measure their separation by constantly sending microwave signals back and forth. In such a way, they're able to immediately see changes from the ground. They'll be able to see aquifers or melting glaciers by changes in the very, very, very precise microwave tracking system of about 1 micrometer.
Using gravitational vision in a way, right?
Yeah, gravitational vision. That's about a tenth of a human hair over the distance between L.A. and San Diego.
Wow.
And these two sats, 137 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating technology. And it will spend the next 5 years mapping the Earth's gravity to study the effects of climate change around the world.
It's amazing how powerful sensing technology has become. We were talking about the sensor on my phone.
Yeah.
It's what's called a time of flight sensor, and it sends out laser light, and it can measure how long the light takes to return from an object that's 5 or 10 feet away, as opposed to the baseline for the speed of light, and it can detect the difference well enough within a few centimeters to be able to place a point there. That helps to find that there's an object there and that it's made of these points along this surface. So, this
is that how it does the depth perception?
Yeah. So the speed of light, everyone thinks it's a fixed speed. It's amazingly fast, but it's not so fast that it can't be witnessed with a super high speed camera, emanating from its source, going through an environment, and then ending up somewhere else. It's still something that's happening over time. It's just a very tiny,
yeah, you see very tiny amounts
very
of time,
tiny amount
for
of time
detecting
the detectors can now
depth.
Measure slices of time even smaller than the speed of light. The same is true for this satellite array that you're talking about.
Yeah, which will give us amazing information mm-hmm. about changes in the climate. Real accurate stuff.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be able to see if gravity is actually a constant or not. You know, maybe it varies in different places. We'll have tools that are sensitive enough to tell.
Yeah, we should tell them to go over the mystery spot here, see if we anything.
Yeah, right.
Anything really weird.
Do we have a black hole right
here? Is there
here
really
in
a
Santa
weird
Cruz?
Mystery spot thing here happening, or what? What's going on there?
Definitely, or what?
There is or is not a mystery spot.
Besides
That's not the mystery.
Besides the GRACE FO system, they also put up the Iridium Next communication satellites. Falcon 9, those are a low Earth orbit network for internet communications.
The Iridium network's pretty old.
One of the first ones, right?
Yeah, well, originally they were.
Weren't they the original cell phones? Was that the Iridium network?
Satellite.
One of the first ones, that's right.
Yeah.
And now they have, I believe it's 55 satellites in orbit, and there's another 5 here. They will join 50 other satellites right down orbit. They just launched 5 more. Operationally, it'll be 66 satellites. And 9 spares in place by the time they have that fully operational.
How many global positioning satellites are out there?
All right. So the latest set of satellites
24.
Has just been launched.
Really? For 24 total? Well,
that's what Google says.
24. One per time
zone. Well, there's this Chinese system.
Six
Russian system.
6 Earth-centered orbital planes with 4 operational satellites and a spare satellite slot in each orbital plane. System can support a constellation of up to 30 satellites in orbit.
Okay, so that's the GPS only. That's not internet.
So that's
at all.
Enough of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And then Elon Musk is SpaceX. They want to launch satellites to blanket the Earth with, internet.
That would completely change the internet as we know it, to have instant access anywhere on the planet.
Right.
Independent of any country's telecommunications
system.
Well,
we know that the only constant is change. And the internet has been a brand new baby invention for about the last 25 years, but imagine how many improvements it's going to go through even just during our lifetime. Originally, the internet was created by individuals just creating a hard drive with their own server and ability to communicate, and so there was this kind of hard drive server network going on. And then the phone companies got involved and cable companies, and there became all these new ways that those servers were connected to each other. And we just keep putting more and more ways that all of these disparate particles of information connect to each other. And it keeps getting faster and more efficient and more ubiquitous. And eventually somebody's going to redesign the whole architecture so that it's healthy and good for us.
That's right.
And
with
seamless.
Satellites, we have the indelible axiom of science. What goes up must come down.
Unless it keeps going. In which case, it'll just go up.
Actually,
and
they just kind of hit each other and break into lots of little pieces and create space junk.
No, no. We got to avoid that. I mean, we've got so much collision detection knowledge now from the internet and from autonomous vehicles. There's no reason why the satellites should have to bump into each other.
We need more information. I want to know about that weird space rock that suggests there might be a mysterious Planet 9 out there.
Oh, we're going to hear about that after the break. I got to go.
Go. Hello, future, glad to meet you. Had to wait some time to see you. Wanted to learn how to treat you right. Now you look so bright.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Well, space.com gave us a very interesting little report on a weird space rock that provides more evidence for a mysterious Planet 9.
All right, space.com found a rock, and now what do we know?
According to,
we never knew before.
According to space.com, astronomers are constantly looking for the elusive Planet 9, and a team found a space rock that lends credence to the idea that a huge super-Earth planet really does exist in the outer reaches of our solar system.
Okay, sounds like some pretty serious Sherlock Holmesing going on.
It's a newfound asteroid. It's called 2015 BP-519.
Oh, these names, they're so memorable.
2015 BP-519 adds to a growing body of evidence about this little world in the solar system that's perturbing our planets. Astronomers have detailed its discovery in a new paper, and they, well, fundamentally, they're looking at bizarre angles of orbits of various planets and satellites in our solar system and seeing that there's something not quite right. There's something that's a little perturbing the orbits of our moons and planets. And what is that? And they found that if they do the calculations, that we could have a planet about 10 times the size of the Earth that whips in really close to us every eon or two. Now, that's like 100 million years. And affect things and then leave again, and go out again. The thing is, it goes way out, way, way far out. And when I'm talking about far out, I'm talking about like more than
600 astronomical units.
That's a long way.
That's 600 times the distance from the sun to the Earth.
That's 93 million miles.
Is one astronomical unit. And that's the distance between here and the sun.
So this imaginary planet, just to put everything in scale here, okay, the solar system, the distance from the Earth to the sun, one astronomical unit. The distance to the outside of Neptune is about 30 astronomical units. The distance to the outside of the Kuiper Belt is about 60 astronomical units. This speculative planet that's supposedly warping the orbits of all these Kuiper Belt objects that are dashing through the universe is 600 astronomical units away from the sun. So it's more than 10 times the distance from here to Jupiter.
Near the edge of what we call
that. That's a very big, very far away planet.
Yeah, for the edge of the solar system itself.
Yeah, well, it's even further than the edge of the solar system, right? Didn't we come up with that the heliosphere ends about, wasn't it only about 100?
900?
Yeah, the heliosphere.
Yeah, this is,
so the solar wind stops clearing the debris out of the area around the sun at about 90 astronomical units. And this imaginary planet is at 600 astronomical units away. So it boggles the mind. And they project that because they found one space rock with this one weird orbit, that the only way to explain its orbit is by having this giant planet far, far away.
Hmm. Yes, and this weird space rock was unique in that it was going around in the opposite, in a bizarre angle of its orbit. You know, it's just moving in a very strange orbital position.
This space rock did not get the same memo as all the other Kuiper Belt objects.
Yeah, something
decided
put it
to go
in that
its
orbit.
Own way.
How did that happen?
Imagine there's a planet.
It's really hard to do.
So far away. You can barely see it.
So another progress here. Let's get back to Earth for a minute. Let's go under the ground. Let's go to Elon Musk's world.
The Boring Company?
The Boring Company, yes. Company. They're actually down in your guys' neck of the woods, down in the L.A. land.
So let's drill down to the facts here.
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of people in L.A. who don't think it's at all boring.
No. Future Annalena.
They're worried about it.
It's got to be better than being in traffic.
That's right.
You now, think.
I mean, how many times have you decided not to go on the 405 because it was too crowded?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, we canceled a trip to visit you guys one time because of all the traffic on the 405.
Oh, that's why.
That was the real reason. It was
I've
all that.
Never heard of a helicopter.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Do I have one? Not so far.
So the LA government wants to know how Musk is going to make this a viable idea for transportation in LA. LA has never really embraced mass transit to begin with as a city. It just
you'd never know.
Yeah.
Well, they've certainly embraced mass traffic jams.
Yeah, that's for sure.
The LA government wants to know how much money he's going to give them for their next campaign before they listen to him talk
that's
about anything.
Probably pragmatic stuff like that.
Oh, well, then they should watch Steve Jobs and his discussion of building the spaceship at Apple with the city council.
Oh, that was great.
They asked him for money, and he said, hey, I'll do my job, and you do yours.
Yeah,
I'll pay my taxes.
That's right.
You don't ask me for bribes.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Okay.
Well, Elon
exactly
said,
what it is.
Well, Elon says you can make the tunnels narrower to reduce costs.
Mm-hmm.
You can have really narrow tunnels because the tunnels goes up exponentially by diameter. And so
sounds like a tie-in with Jenny Craig.
Tiny tunnels?
Tiny tunnels.
And
tunnel.
The cost going up exponentially with diameter. Okay.
That's a Don Ho song, Tiny Tunnels.
Do you want to give one of our last 3 minutes to our caller, Michael in Santa Cruz?
Sure, let's talk to Michael.
All right. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I was wondering, you guys aren't referring to, with that last reference to the theory of the planet, you're not referring to Planet X, are you, or Nibiru?
Yes.
Well, you know, there are, like you say, fringe science ideas of an extra planet, and then there are more mainstream ideas. This is more of a mainstream idea.
Yeah, it's bridging the gap because it was on space.com. And it was an analysis of a real space rock, not just a fake one.
Spaced.com, which would be a different story. This is astronomers as opposed to astrologers.
I see.
Yeah.
And have you guys ever thought of doing a show where you actually have a few guests or call-in guests for speaking from pivotal perspectives on what...
That's a great idea, Michael.
Yeah.
You want to help us put that together?
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking about, since you guys are reaching to those realms, that's one that would be of interest probably to, that awareness of Nibiru or the consideration of it is kind of spread far and wide across the gamut of different angles or different...
Well, we saw for quite a few space friends at Maker Faire that, you know, work for various organizations.
Anyway, I like the idea. I think I appreciate the suggestion.
Yeah, it goes back to Velikovsky when worlds collide in the 50s, at the very least. It's a rich area that where there might be another planet, a doppelganger planet even. A very rich history. So, yes, I think it would be an excellent idea for a story.
And All right.
Any ideas for that or any people you could recommend, please send this to us at our email, future@ksco.com. future@ksco, okay?
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, appreciate it.
We all have space madness.
That would be out of this world.
Yeah.
Space madness.
The history of Planet X. I think there were a whole bunch of books around 2012 on that kind of subject.
No, it's been around for a long time, the whole idea of another planet.
Never
It'd be nice
old.
To have another Earth that we didn't have to terraform in order to live, like Mars or Venus, you know, something that was more friendly.
Mm.
You know, if something like that actually could... Though in this case, the planet is 10 times the size of the Earth. It's probably a gas giant, more like Jupiter, at least according to the current projections.
Well, didn't they say it's 600 times the size of the Earth?
No, 10 times.
Oh, 10 times the size of the Earth, that's all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at least in the simulations.
Just pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space.
Pray.
Because there's none at all down here on Earth.
And for the last few minutes, we have Richard and Greg serenading us out of the show with a little live
that was
music
your serenade?
Here.
This is my 3D printed ukulele.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear the ukulele.
Strolling with my girlie where the dew is pearly early in the morning.
So long from Dr. Future on KSCO.